This is a public service announcement sponsored by Just Blaze and the good folks at Rockefeller Records.
Fellow Americans, it is with the utmost pride and sincerity that I present this recording as a living testament and recollection of history in the making during our generation.
Allow me to reintroduce myself. My name is Ho. H to the O-V. I used to move snowflakes by the O-Z. I guess even back then you could call me CEO of the R-O-C-O.
Welcome into another edition of the Naked Bootleg Podcast. I'm Evan Lazar, joined again with Adam Kirchin here. Adam, welcome back. Dave went without you a little bit earlier, so.
Yeah.
All right, let's get right into it here discuss the news of the day. Unfortunately for the Patriots here, it sounds like they're going to be without linebacker Dante Hightower for the rest of the season with a torn pec in that game last week against the Falcons. And, you know, just a huge blow. And obviously you can't really overstate it enough how important Hightower is to this team.
Yeah, I think it hurts on multiple levels, not just because it's Hightower, but because it comes just off the heels of the defense putting together some really nice performances and sort of rounding into form. And now you have to sort of scrap everything and start over again. And you're pretty well into the season now. And you don't want to have to do that, obviously. So, I mean, nobody ever wants to do that. But, you know, I feel like Hightower is such an important player. There's things you can do to sort of tread water, but this defense isn't going to get better now. Without him, the defense can only sort of, you know, hope to, you know, maintain some level of competence. It's not going to get to a shutdown point. He's just that important. I feel like I really feel strongly about that. The linebacker group, it's going to depend a lot more on guys like David Harris. I mean, Kyle Van Noy is your best linebacker at this point, in my opinion. And so, you know, they're just going to have to do more. They're going to have to do more to fill his role. Now, obviously, you can trade. You know, the names like Jonathan Casillas have been thrown around a lot. But still, no matter what, no matter who you bring in, they're not going to be as important on the field or off the field in terms of leadership as Hightower. So this is a huge blow. I don't think, it can be understated. You know, I don't think this – necessarily, you know, torpedoes their chances to, you know, make it to the Super Bowl or win it or any of that stuff, but it does really, really hurt it, and it's not something you can sort of gloss over.
Yeah, if you're gonna make a list, we talked about this with Duffy a few weeks ago, that list of, you know, most important Patriots, Hightower is right in that top five, you would think, you know, in terms of just leadership, but also the versatility that he brings. You know, he can play inside, he can play outside, he can rush the passer, he can stop the run, he can drop into coverage. They don't have a lot of guys that can do all of that. You know, they have guys that can do one or two of those things. You know, maybe you have a guy like Kyle Van Noy who can kind of stay in the middle of the defense and do some dropping into coverage and stuff like that, but he's not an elite pass rusher or an elite run stopper, really, although he's been better in that respect in recent weeks. With Hightower, really, two things really stand out to me schematically in terms of what they're going to miss with him. And the first thing is the biggest one, and that is nobody to play strong side linebacker. You know, who's going to take on the double teams at strong side linebacker, you know, especially at that edge position. We saw last week against Atlanta, a team that really likes to run a lot of tosses and stretch runs and stuff. Hightower was the key to stopping that because he, you know, would take on the double team from the tackle and the tight end and either push the run back and towards the middle or, you know, stop the run himself towards the outside, towards the edge or towards the boundary. Without him there, you know, I don't know who plays that role. I don't know if they have a guy on the roster who can really play that role. So maybe things have to change in terms of how they just approach things altogether. And maybe they play more of a 4-2 and play more two linebacker with Van Noy and Harris or Van Noy and Roberts or something like that. But you're just not going to get the same presence on the edge as you got with Hightower. And then obviously the second thing is, I think as soon as he came back from the little injury that he had during the preseason, the leadership on the field was apparent to everybody around him. And it was a big talking point for the players after that game about having Hightower back and how big that was to kind of get everybody on the same page and everybody in the right spots and stuff like that, as kind of that vocal leader of the defense on the field. So you lose your best strong side linebacker, your best edge rusher, and you lose your best leader. So that's for a defense, that's a really that's a tough one. That's a tough one to overcome. And obviously, I agree with you that you know, it sounds like as long as this injury is as serious as these reports are indicating, that you know this defense is probably going to be treading water for the rest of the season. Now without Hightower, and not necessarily get much better as the season goes along because they're missing Hightower.
Yeah, and I think that basically is really what it's all about. You know, the leadership thing can't be discounted. He's really a guy that holds people accountable. There's only so much a coaching staff can do when it comes to keeping players in line with it, when there's that many players on a football team, you know. So you need those guys in the locker room to be sort of the coaches on the field, as the cliche goes. But and he's one of those guys, and he fills so many roles on the field. He fills such a huge one off the field. It really is one of those things where everybody else in those roles has to step up their intensity. They have to sort of step up their performance. I'm not confident in the fact that, you know, the defense can really play at a level that it has been these last couple games without Hightower.
Yeah,
there's going to be an immediate adjustment period in the immediate games after, and then they're going to have to figure something out, and you don't want to have to do that at this point in the season. If they knew that Hightower was going to be done for this season, or possibly done for this season — there was a Schefter tweet that intimated that perhaps the Patriots think that he might not definitely be done for the season — but you know, if they knew at the beginning of the season that he'd be done for the season, then you know, they'd have a better chance of, you know, being able to handle this. But yeah, they have to sort of hit the reset button at a point in the season where you're supposed to really know what you have.
Right.
You really do that.
It's tough. Yeah, I mean, if there's some indications that maybe from Schefter, like you just mentioned, that maybe this isn't quite season-ending. I can't imagine the guy playing with a torn pec, but if anybody was going to play with a torn pec, it's Dante Hightower. Like, you know, that guy's played through everything. Played through a torn labrum in the Super Bowl, you know, a couple of other injuries, MCLs, stuff like that. He's one of the toughest dudes you'll ever see on a football field. But, you know, I think that the name that's kind of popped up that I wanted to bring up before we move on was Shay McClellan, who's going to be coming back off the IR. You know, could you put Shay McClellan in the game in Hightower's spot? Sure. But is that going to have the same impact, or anywhere close to the same impact, that Hightower had in that spot? No. In my opinion, at least, you know. And the biggest thing is that McClellan's athletic. You know, he can rush the passer a little bit. He can drop into coverage if you need him to. But he can't hold the point of attack. You know, he's not a big guy. He's not – Hightower is – what's rare about him is that he has that type of athleticism, but he's also 270 pounds as a linebacker. You know, McClellan is not. You know, he's much more of a body build as, like, Cassius Marsh is. Right. And, you know, that's as we know, see with Cassius Marsh in the run game, you know, those types of guys get pushed around by some of these better blockers and some of these bigger fronts that they face on the offensive side of the ball. You know, a team like Kansas City, a team like Pittsburgh, some of these teams that they might play you know, are going to have that advantage now. You know, and I think that McClellan is the guy that is the obvious answer when he comes back off of the IR, you know, to do it in just in terms of, like, who's going to physically be playing that spot. But I think that this defense is going to have to find a different type of formula in terms of stopping the run than they had in the first, you know, 6-7 weeks of the season here without Hightower in the lineup. And maybe a trade happens. You know, me and Miguel talked a lot about trades a few days ago. You know, it's obviously really tough to guess who they're going to trade for. You know, could be anyone. But, you know, I think that that's not – everything has to be on the table here because, like you said, it's too late in the season to just simply, you know, rework things completely to kind of mask this injury.
Right, and I think that basically what it comes down to, they can do their best to deal with this problem, but they can't solve it unless he comes back. You know, that's the you can't solve this problem without the player. You know, that he's just too good. He's too much of a leader. You know, the best you can do, like we said, is tread water and try to figure out a way to you just simply can't get to the point where your defense will be at its best without a player like Dante Hightower.
Yeah, that pretty much sums it up right there. And, you know, it's been a tough year, I think, for injuries to major, you know, Pats players here. Obviously, Julian Edelman goes down in the third preseason game. Now they're playing about, you know, 60% of the season or so without Hightower. You know, not two guys that you really want to see sideline with serious injuries if you're a Pats fan if going into the season. So let's knock on wood and pray that everyone else gets through the season healthy. But let's move on now and go into another kind of injury situation too here with the cornerbacks. Johnson Bademosi has kind of earned some playing time in some people's eyes, and in my eyes he's certainly played very well. But Stephon Gilmore sounds like he is on the mend in the concussion, at least, I don't know about this week necessarily, but at least after the bye, it sounds like he's going to be all right to play. So the question here is, Adam, is, you know, do you give Bademosi, still give Bademosi time at cornerback, or is Stephon Gilmore just step right back into his, you know, spot and play every down?
Well, you know, I don't think it'll be that black and white. I do feel like Johnson Bademosi deserves to keep playing, but it's not as if they'll be playing teams that only are playing two wide receivers and stuff like that. So I think there's, you know, a chance you can get all three guys on the field at the same time.
So maybe this is bad news for Eric Rowe then.
and you know, when he comes back. And so but I think, you know, the way I look at it, it's a good problem to have because it's, you know, you're talking about having too much, you know, talent or too much depth at the cornerback position, which you can't have too much at the cornerback position, especially the way the league is now, the way teams throw, the way teams spread it out. This is a good problem to have. This is the best you could have hoped for when Gilmore went out, is for somebody to come in and really shine like Bademosi has. And even Jonathan Jones, I think, has played well in his spots. Guys tried to pick on him, and he's done fairly well. So I think this actually gives, you know, Belichick and Patricia some ability to be creative with their coverages. I still think, you know, with Gilmore, to have his size against bigger receivers like the Mike Evans things, I think Bademosi is so good in terms of and valuable in terms of, like, you didn't see any of those major coverage breakdowns when he was in the game, you know, and at the very least, none of them were his fault. I just don't remember any, you know, huge breakdowns while he was in. And there's huge value in that. But there is also a lot of value in somebody like Gilmore being big enough to go up against a huge receiver like a Mike Evans. So this is one of those deals where I feel like, okay, the Patriots now have more pieces they can throw out there that they can be confident in. Now, it, you know, that gives them more flexibility play calling wise. It's flexibility personnel wise. This means you don't necessarily have to rely on three safeties on the field at the same time. So, you know, at the end of the day, I think this is a plus. You know, I'm not sure how the Patriots will exactly handle it, but if it were me and if you had to choose between Gilmore and Bartomosi, I kind of like would choose Bartomosi right now.
Yeah.
Because, you know, this is the best the defense has looked in the secondary all year. And, you know, maybe it's a coincidence, but maybe not. So,
yeah, it's a tough one.
I would lean towards that. But then again, if you have, you're going up against a 6'4 guy, you want Gilmore in there. He can really block out the sun, as some people like to say.
So, right. Yeah. I mean, we said this off air, but, you know, as soon as Gilmore gets back in the game and messes up in a coverage bust or something like that, Twitter is going to explode. You know, Patriots Twitter is just going to have its way with him. And, you know, the thing is that to me, when I watched it on tape, when I watched Bartomosi in the game versus when Gilmore was in the game earlier in the year, it reminded me more of last year's secondary, right? Like it was like Bartomosi was basically Logan Ryan, you know, not necessarily in how he played, you know, play type wise. I just mean like the defense, the secondary, its assignments were met every single time, like they were when Logan Ryan and Malcolm Butler were the tandem. You know, it was very much in sync. They played as a team back there, you know, against the Falcons. That was really how they stopped them. It wasn't like, you know, they said to Malcolm Butler, like, we're going to put you on an island against Julio and Malcolm Butler, Darrell Revis, the guy, you know, that wasn't the situation. It was like everybody, five, six guys in the back end playing on one string. And that was the difference between like when Gilmore was out there versus when Bartomosi was out there, was that when Bartomosi was out there, it was a very workman's like approach in the back end and a very Patriots like approach, you know, everybody doing their jobs. Bartomosi playing a lot of zone, keeping Julio, you know, in check in terms of the underneath stuff, and then kind of passing him off to the safeties deep and, you know, getting physical with him at the line of scrimmage and, you know, whoever it was that he was covering, really. It was a lot, it looked a lot like the secondary has over the last year or so with Logan Ryan and Butler being the two guys as the primary cover guys. And then when Gilmore was in the game, it looked more like, okay, we paid this guy, you know, a butt ton of money to come in here and be a number one corner. You know, we're going to have him be a shutdown guy on one side of the field. And it was kind of less of a team game as it was with Bartomosi, you know, because I think they knew that Bartomosi isn't as talented as Stephon Gilmore. So you have to, you know, give him more help. You have to rotate more safeties his direction. You have to, you know, cover as a team. So it's kind of like one of those things where, you know, it's pick your poison. It's which one do you prefer? You know, do you prefer a guy like Gilmore, who is really ultra talented, has the ability to do pretty much everything, has the ability to shut down the big wide receivers like you discussed, or do you like the guy like Bartomosi, who just kind of does what he's told, does his job, the whole Patriot way thing? I think that, you know, a lot of Patriots fans certainly are going to lean towards Bartomosi just because that's what's worked in the past for this team.
Yeah, I agree. And it's one of those deals, too, where, you know, that Falcons game was the best defensive performance of the season, you know. And, you know, I remember, you know, for a lot, you know, you remember at the beginning of the year when they're having those struggles, they're like, we can't simplify this any more than we already have. You know, and it's not, they didn't simplify things for Johnson. You know, the defense wasn't dumbed down when he came in.
If anything, it got more complex
right
last week against Atlanta with the different coverages, the brackets, coverages, double teams, all that type of stuff.
Right. And at the end of the day, that's what you want, because that's the Patriots' edge when they're playing defense, is how multiple they can be, how they can keep quarterbacks guessing. That's what you want. So, you know, like I said, you know, if I had to choose, it would be Bartomosi, honestly. But I don't think they necessarily have to choose. I don't think it's a binary choice. I think, you know, you now have, you know, these cornerbacks that you're confident in pretty much all of them, in certain situations at least. And I think it's a, like I said, it's a good problem to have. And, you know, that's, you know, I guess the silver lining is from this Hightower injury is that, you know, you lose Hightower, but, you know, from the beginning of the season, that was, you know, always, anytime you lose Hightower, it's bad. But, you know, since the beginning of the season, now you look at the secondary and that looks much like in a much better spot. So,
yeah. This is the secondary that I think we thought we were getting from day one, right? You know, a team that could really clamp down, really do a lot of different stuff to do it too against the Falcons. They played man, they played cover three, they played bracket coverages, they double teamed, straight up double teamed Julio. You know, they did a lot of different things to shut this Falcons offense, the passing offense, down. I mean, Matt Ryan only attempted four deep passes the entire game because of how good the safety play was for the Patriots. Yeah, I think that, you know, on paper, or what you're seeing on the film, I should say, Bademosi is the guy. I just don't think that they're going to do it. I think that Gilmore goes right back into his starting role. I think they're paying him too much. I know that doesn't necessarily matter too much to Belichick in the past, but I really do think that his contract and what they gave him, they really truly think that he is a great fit in this defense. And, you know, I think they thought that the kind of transition period at the beginning of the year was just that, a transition period into a new defensive scheme for Gilmore. I think that, you know, they're going to want to see if he can play the way that they thought that he could play, and they haven't really had a chance to see it because the concussion happened just when he was starting to maybe get it a little bit. Yeah. You know, I just don't see Bademosi out-snapping Gilmore or anything like that. I just think Gilmore is the guy that they brought in here to be a shutdown outside corner for them, and I would just be shocked if all of a sudden, just because Bademosi's done a great job, nothing taking away from him, but I'd be shocked if all of a sudden that plan just kind of vanishes because of Bademosi. But maybe it will. And also I think that, you know, not that this is quite as important about him playing corner, but if you do, you know, take away some of Bademosi's snaps on defense, you can play him more on special teams again. And now you really have a dangerous coverage team in terms of special teams with guys like Slater and Jonathan Jones and Brandon King and Bademosi. I mean, that's a amazing group. It's already one of the best groups in the league. And then you throw Bademosi back into the mix because he plays less on defense now. I mean, that's going to be one of the best coverage units in the entire league on special teams. So, you know, it's a great problem to have, like you said. I just think that, you know, they really invested a lot of time and money into Gilmore. I would be shocked if all of a sudden, you know, his role was taken away for a guy that they, you know, acquired for a 6th-round pick. But that's like kind of the Patriot way. Like I was saying, you know, like Bademosi is kind of more towards the Patriot formula, a guy that just comes in, works hard, does his job, does what he's told by the coaching staff. You know, there was no freelancing by Bademosi in the last couple games.
No.
You know, he's out there and, you know, they say bracket Julio, he brackets Julio. They say play press cover two, he plays press cover two.
Right.
You know, so on and so forth. So not that Gilmore was freelancing, just it wasn't as crisp. And it wasn't the defense on the back end wasn't on the same page quite the same. So I get it, and I know that it's coming. Gilmore gets back in that game on Sunday and blows a coverage again, or blows an assignment. The pitchforks are coming out, you know, and you feel bad for the player in terms of that because it could spiral out of control for Gilmore this season, where it's like almost a lost season for him. If he continues to make mistakes and you know, the coaching staff and the fans and all that stuff really start to get on him, and you see that this defense with Bademosi, who's a far less talented player, is, you know, better. That says a lot when you are paying a guy $65 million over the next couple years to play corner here. So that's tough. But let's move on and preview this Chargers game a little bit here. The Chargers come into this game at 3-4, started the season 0-4, but they started the season with a couple really really close losses. They lost by three to Denver. They lost by a couple to Miami, both on like kind of some weird field goal stuff that happened. And then also they lost a close one to the Eagles as well. So very easily could be, a 5-2, 4, type of team here, or at least a 4-3 team. But, now they're 3-4. They come in here with a little bit of momentum after beating Denver last week by three touchdowns. It's shutting out the Broncos. Looks like this defense in Sandy or LA now, especially is turning a corner here.
Yeah, I think it's, I wrote about this today. It's really interesting to see what they do when it comes to third down and rushing the passer, and Belichick talked about it a lot. Especially with Ingram, they'll move him all over. It's crazy. They'll line him up as a, sort of a defensive tackle, line him up on the edge. They'll have him stand at the line of scrimmage. They'll have his hand in the dirt. They'll put him at linebacker. They'll have him drop into coverage. They'll use him as a decoy. And it really is one of those things, there's certain teams that do a lot to disguise who's coming and who's not better than others. And I think the Chargers are one of those teams that do it better than others. So you get a lot of free running guys coming at the quarterback and laying them out. And the numbers support that. Those pass rushers for the Chargers have racked up quite a few this year. So I think the good thing is for the Pats when they're facing a team like that is that they're a unit that's been together for a while in terms of continuity. And so communication-wise, I don't think they're going to have – they're better equipped to face an attack like that than, say if, Andrews was just in his first year or they were switching guys around. That kind of – instability is the type of thing that the Chargers feast on. And, they really did it last week against the Broncos, but the Broncos' offensive line's kind of a mess.
Yeah.
Sort of has been the last 2 years. So it's – and then you – and just simply from a physical standpoint, these guys are beasts too. Even if you know where they're coming from, Bosa can get to the quarterback, Ingram, all those guys. So I think that's one of the main matchups that is going to be important. And I think it is a little dangerous, this team, just because for a long time, not even just this year, but even last year, I felt like the Chargers were one of those teams that would know how to make it a close game, but they'd lose.
They've played every single game they've played in besides two. So 5 out of their 7 games have been decided by 5 points or less.
Right. And it was kind of like that last year. I'm not looking it up right now, but it felt like that last year too. If you're looking at point spreads and stuff, they'd cover but lose. They're the kings.
Yeah.
So, but now it's a little dangerous because it seems like they've got some confidence and they're learning how to win. So, so maybe they come in here and feel like they've got a little bit more of a shot because they've turned a corner. Obviously they have confidence. They've won 3 straight games, but. I still think the, Patriots are the better team, but I don't think it's going to be some sort of blowout, just because the way things have gone. And also the first week after, losing a guy like Hightower, there's going to be a greater adjustment period. I don't feel like a Patriots blowout coming. I see like a
real. Yeah. Well, the Chargers also, the Chiefs blew them out, and then they blew out the Broncos, but the Chiefs didn't really blow them out. They beat them by 2 touchdowns, and they scored a touchdown late to kind of open that game up. But I think that if there is a team to play without Hightower for the first time, it might be this Chargers team because they don't run the ball. You know, they really don't run the ball at all, and their offensive line is pretty doo-doo. So, you know, that two things right there, you watch this Chargers offense and you really see kind of a microcosm of how important offensive line play is to the rest of the unit on offense. You know, you hear it a lot, it sounds kind of cliche, but it's really true that out of anything, I mean, maybe the quarterback position, you could make this argument too, but with the offensive line, when it's not good, it just completely ruins the rest of the offense. Like, right. This Chargers offense has a lot of skill players on it. Keenan Allen, Melvin Gordon in the backfield, who's one of my favorite running backs to watch, really a complete runner out of the backfield. Hunter Henry, Tyrell Williams, Antonio Gates is obviously still there. So they have some skill players, but the problem is that they don't have an offensive line that's worth a damn. So it really hampers stuff that they can do in terms of, you know, hanging on to the ball and letting the receivers get open downfield, or running the ball and establishing the run with Melvin Gordon, who, if you give him running opportunities, Gordon, as we saw last year, will take them and have a, you know, have good day running the football. But right now, it's just a really terrible effort from the offensive line, especially that right side of that offensive line. And their right tackle, Michael Schofield, I felt bad for the guy last week against Von Miller. He just got absolutely humiliated against Von, you know, just not even close. So it's one of those situations for them offensively. And also, I think it's interesting that they have Ken Whisenhunt back, and they have Anthony Lynn, who's an offensive-minded guy. And this offense still kind of has that Falcons-Bucks feel to it, where, like, they don't really know what they're doing. There's a little bit of stagnation, a little bit of kind of an identity crisis, and maybe some a lack of rhythm overall, because it's not talent. You know, they have a quarterback, they have skill players, but it still feels like it's just, when you watch it, there's just no urgency. There's no real identity to this team. Phillip Rivers looks like he's frustrated out there a lot of the times with, I don't know if it's with the play calling or with his teammates, but you know, overall, it kind of has the same feel offensively in that sense to the Bucks and to the Falcons, where, like, they're really talented and they have a lot of pieces, but they're just not clicking right now at the level that you would expect. Especially given the fact that Whisenhunt, the offensive coordinator, was there last year, he was there a few years ago, has some continuity with Phillip Rivers, and that was kind of why they kept him. They held him over. The new coaching staff from last year was to continue to have that continuity. So I think that has that kind of feel to it offensively. But having said that, Phillip Rivers is you know, he's a guy that's going to go after you. He's not going to shy away from making throws. I thought the Falcons and Matt Ryan and Jameis, when they played the Bucks, were a little gun shy at times.
Yeah.
And throwing the ball into tight windows, throwing the ball into coverage a little bit, and giving their guys chances, guys like Mike Evans and Julio. Sometimes you got to just throw the ball up to those guys. Yeah. And Ryan and Jameis just didn't really seem to have the accuracy on the day to kind of make that happen. There was some open receivers in this last game against the Falcons, but really Matt Ryan tried to hit some of them, but it really wasn't a crisp pass. It was either inaccurate or he just kind of was a little gun-shy in terms of he didn't want to throw that big pick, I think is really what it was.
Right.
And it really led to them being very conservative on offense. As, you know, as I mentioned, they really didn't throw the ball down the field very much, and it was just a conservative approach. So Phillip Rivers isn't going to do that. You know, Phillip Rivers is not afraid to throw an interception. He's not afraid to throw the ball into a tight window. You know, so I think in that respect, if there are similar openings to what there were in the last couple weeks, the opportunities that they have given teams, I do think that Phillip Rivers is going to take advantage of them maybe a little bit more than Matt Ryan and Jameis did, especially. And then defensive side of the ball for the Falcons, Chargers, I mean, yeah, they're a very talented group. Joey Bosa and Melvin Ingram, they played in that 4-3 under Gus Bradley, the defensive coordinator, basically brought the Seattle defense to LA this season, and they play a very similar style. They play with a designated pass rusher who's usually Melvin Gordon and Melvin Ingram, excuse me, and that gives him opportunities to really get after the passer, and like you mentioned, free runs to the quarterback a lot of the time. And that's the nature of that defensive scheme. and then they play a lot of cover one and cover three on the back end. But I think that there is an advantage. You know, they can't test Bosa and Ingram too often. You wind that clock up too many times, they're going to knock Brady's head off. But I do think that there is one advantage, and we can talk it out, is in the middle of the field with Gronkowski. You know, when I look at teams and I, you know, look at see what they have on defense, I always look and see, like, who's the Gronkowski stopper on this team. You know, last week the Falcons had Deion Jones. They have Keanu Neal. They have some guys that you could maybe throw at Gronk. The Jets on paper had Jamal Adams. You know, we can keep going back of the entire season and find at least one guy on each team. On this team, they don't have great linebackers and they don't have great safety play. So I don't really see who is the guy that's really going to get Gronk most of the time. You know, their safeties are zone safeties. They have two guys, Trey Boston and Adai, who they got in here to play cover three and cover one. You know, play either deep center field like Boston does, or Adai is more of the robber in the middle of the field. But he's not. Neither one of those guys are guys that you're going to put in man coverage on a guy like Gronkowski. They don't have the linebackers that can really do it either. They really don't have very good linebackers at all. Hayes Pollard's a guy that plays a lot for them, and he's not very good. A very limited player. And then they maybe the rookie Desmond King plays a little bit, who's kind of their slot corner, but he's way undersized to be going up against Gronk. He's about 5'10". Gronk almost has a foot on him. So I don't know about that. So I think that the real advantage on this defense, because they have two really good corners, Casey Hayward especially is a great player, and they have a really good pass rush. But I think that they have, I think they have a problem with in terms of stopping Gronk and stopping the running backs out of the backfield.
Yeah, and I think that's sort of the gist when I look at this game, is the Patriots match up really well. Even though the Chargers have some good players, there's a lot of matchups that are in their favor. I think we have to remember, too, that the Chargers aren't good at all against the run. And that's going to be key, because the worst thing the Patriots can do against this team is get in the third and long situations. And I think they've been running the ball better lately, the Patriots. And if they can continue to do that against the Chargers, and I think they will, they can stay out of those situations for the most part. So I think this is, you know, a decent Chargers team. But I do think that overall the Patriots, if they're going to have a good team come in here, it would be a team like the Chargers, where the matchups overall favor them in more than one aspect. So I think this should be a close game, but I think the Patriots have enough to, you know, exploit certain matchups and sort of weaken some of the Chargers' strengths in a lot of areas.
Yeah, I agree with the matchup thing. Like I said, I think that, you know, they have across the board, other than really when one of the – whoever is going up against Casey Hayward, they pretty much have that matchup won. Williams, their other corner on the other side, has played well as the boundary corner, probably better than they expected. Kind of an unknown guy who's come in and played pretty well. But he's not, you know, an all-pro type player or anything like that, like a Casey Hayward is. Hayward on the other side in the field corner is a much better player. But at the same time, I think that the Patriots don't necessarily rely on going, you know, up the boundary against a cornerback like Hayward that often anyways. So I don't know if that's necessarily a huge advantage for the Chargers as it is against some other teams. But in the middle of the field, I think they have an advantage. The Chargers do have guys that can stop the run, but they're not a great run defense, as you mentioned. You know, they play those bare fronts, those 4-3 fronts, and they play a lot of Mebane in the middle of that defense. Is kind of their big guy, their run stopper, and Corey Lugett's a good player inside too. Good defensive line. I mean, just a talented defensive line, but the rest of the defense I think is beatable. I think it's a matter of they have to game plan ways to slow down that pass rush, you know, whether it's running the football consistently, Everyone wants to say the screen game. The screen game this year for me hasn't really brought much to the table. I think it's one of the worst years in recent memory that I can remember in terms of the Patriots running back screens. It just hasn't been as effective as it has in years past, it seems. So maybe not so much that, but getting the ball out of Brady's hands quickly and just kind of like always having in mind that those two guys, Bosa and Ingram, are coming. You know, you can't just fall asleep at the wheel and forget that Melvin Ingram is going up against Nate Solder on some of these pass rushes. It has a chance to have some ugly moments for the Patriots if Solder and Ingram especially get matched up, because Ingram's like one of the quickest guys around the edge in the entire league, and Solder's had trouble with that. But I think that the main thing is that they're going to tell their tackles, and they did this pretty well against Atlanta, is just push those guys past Brady. Don't try to block them and stalemate them, but instead just push them around, push them past Brady as best as you can, and let him step up into the pocket and hope that, what happened against Atlanta happens against the Chargers, and that is that interior offensive line, Andrews, Tooney, and Mason, are able to give Brady lanes to step up into, which is exactly what they did against the speed rushers with the Falcons, and it worked. It worked pretty well. So maybe that's the answer, is to just keep pushing those guys behind Brady and have him step up in the pocket and give him more room that way. But either way, like you said, you get into third and long, you get into obvious passing situations, you get down in this game by more than a score, and you have to start throwing the ball a lot, Ingram and Bosa are going to come after Brady. I don't know if maybe Cannon's up for the task, but I don't really think Solder's up for the task of blocking those guys right now the way that he's been playing. So it could be an ugly game in terms of Brady getting hit if they kind of fall behind, or if they don't strategically, come up with enough ways to slow those two guys down.
Yep. All right. So I think we've covered just about everything.
As we always do. We just talk for a very long time, and yeah. I talk about it in every single angle possible.
So, all right, what do you have coming down the pike here for the weekend?
Sure. So, unfortunately, the game film from this Falcons game is covered in fog, as everybody knows at this point. So, I did the thread, but I'm probably going to skip a real film breakdown this week, just because I'd love to do it on the secondary and kind of show what they were able to do to stop this Falcons team, but it's kind of a lost cause with the way that the fog came in the second half of the game. But other than that, just look at the thread on my Twitter from this past game. I had a story come out in the Herald yesterday about the deep passing defense and how they kind of stopped the Falcons from gaining chunk yards through the air like the other teams were doing. Only one pass play of 20 or more yards from the Falcons. They had all the rest of the season had given up 27 in the previous 6 weeks. So a huge difference and a huge step forward in terms of giving up those chunk yardage plays through the air. So, check those two things out.
Yep, and I'm doing feature on David Harris, which apparently is becoming more timely now.
Maybe David Harris is the new strong side linebacker. Who knows?
Well, no, I don't necessarily think that, but just in general to have, to take a look at the linebackers now that with Hightower at. So, it'll be an interesting weekend. And I think there's a lot we'll, I don't think we'll learn everything about what this team's going to look like post Hightower this weekend, but it'll be interesting to keep an eye on that.
Yeah, absolutely. And we'll be back next week. We'll do a recap show, and then Patriots bye week, so we get a week off from that. But we're getting into the part of the season where these wins, just adding up these wins at this point, is all that really matters. You're kind of in the grind of the middle of the season here. So, it might not necessarily be the prettiest win on Sunday for the Patriots against the Chargers, but if they do get the win, You know, that's really what's coming down to the most important thing at this point of the season. So for Adam Kirchin, I'm Evan Lazar. We'll be back next week.
Allow me to reintroduce myself. My name is O-O-H to the O-V. I used to move snowflakes by the O-Z. I guess even back then you can call me CEO of the R-O-C-O. Fresh out the front.